Welcome to the Everyone's a Critic Movie Review Podcast. I'm your co-host, Bob Zarrell. With me, as always, is professional film critic Sean Patrick. Visit us at ihatecritics.net, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube. Critics Pods are handle. Like us there, subscribe to the show, write and review the show. We're on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Alexa, Stitcher, all your podcatchers. We'll read any reviews on the air. It does help us move up the charts. Patreon, ihatecritics.net/Patreon, best way to help support the podcast. And then we also have our podcast merch tab. A lot going on this episode, so we'll just get into it. Josh like Midsummer.
Hey, right? I know. That was wonderful. I wish he were here to say it for himself, but he's actually right now as we speak at Birds of Prey from what I saw.
Really?
But yeah, he actually was messaging us and was totally freaked out the entire time, which is exactly the experience of Midsummer.
So next time he's on, we'll definitely have him explain himself and why it took so long. And speaking of Birds of Prey, do you like how they changed the name?
Oh, now it's Harley Quinn.
Harley Quinn, colon, Birds of Prey, none of this emancipation stuff. I mean, I don't know. It's a February release. What do you expect? $80 million budget. Maybe you don't spend as much in advertising, but I don't know. I still want to see it.
It's really good. It's a shame that it's getting treated the way it is.
Well, it's like you said. It's not a true flop. Maybe it doesn't make its money back. It's going to do fine on the streaming platforms. It's going to make its money back overall. It doesn't need to be treated the way it's being treated. It's just a shame. And then there were the Oscars.
Those happened.
I'm only bringing it up because, you know, they had that opening number, which was really good, really powerful. I liked it. It was really about a lot of the, you know, the lack of female directors, the lack of African-American or other races nominated for acting awards, brought up in the song they were singing while wearing Midsummer gear.
Yeah.
So it was just like, let's throw Midsummer into this political speech as well.
Because that wasn't included either. The whole thing was about movies that weren't nominated.
Right, Dolomite was in there. Yeah, there was a lot of them. I didn't remember Uncut Gems, but that doesn't mean it wasn't.
Yeah.
It's hard to also portray that in that song. But yeah, that was awesome. And just made everybody look awkward in the front row. But there's a lot of
these movies are better than yours.
And Parasite won, so I went and saw it. First of all, your reaction to Parasite winning?
I was surprised.
Better
I thought
1917.
I thought for sure that 1917 was going to win, and I got nothing against 1917, but comparatively, it's the safer choice. It's the one that most people are going to go. Most older audiences are going to go to, and the one that had, I think, the most broad appeal in terms of total audience. I was surprised. I didn't think the Academy had it in them to make this choice. So, I guess good for them. They still picked Green Book last year. So,
well, yeah, I'm not. It's not saving the Oscars for by any means, because maybe it's in my top 10, right around where Once Upon a Time in the West landed. I'll put it ahead of The Irishman. I still got Uncut Gems, Waves, Midsummer, Lighthouse. Pretty much everything A24 did. But I will say it's an insanely original movie that I watched last night.
I think the Academy Awards, I think we need to boycott them until A24 actually wins something, right?
Did Room win anything?
Oh, wait, Moonlight won. Never mind.
Moonlight won as well. Room didn't win, but she won.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, but Midsummer, come on. I keep waiting for, like, I was, part of my problem with Parasite was I'm waiting to be shocked that it's better than Midsummer, and that's not a fair way to go into a movie. But at the same time, it's not, you know, in terms of originality, it's right up there with Waves and Midsummer, and I mean, it really is an original movie. It just keeps taking weird turns, and I'm glad I saw it. It's a great, great movie. And of all the ones nominated, I'd say it's the best. Maybe it'd be, to me, it's that Once Upon a Time in Hollywood would have been the two I had right there. I don't remember what. I mean, as much as I love Ford versus Ferrari, sorry.
You're killed off in Joker that much.
No. Joker's right. I'd put Joker in there too. I forgot it was nominated. Even with his vegan acceptance speech. So it would be between the three of them. I'd still say I think I like Parasite. I mean, it's hard for me to... The originality alone, I mean, that's really what I'm looking for anymore in the movies. The fact that we have to see so many of them, and I see a fraction of what you see, and I still see a lot more than everybody else in the world. So it's... At this point, it's just like, I want something original. And it's like, I'm okay. Like, we're skipping a movie this week because... Who cares? You know? And I'm cool with that. I like the idea of seeing something wholly original, and this definitely was, and that alone appealed to me, and I'm glad I went and saw it. It is on, one, it's back in the theaters, but it's also on your streaming. It's on Amazon right now, so.
It's an exciting, strange movie, and then it takes that turn towards the end, towards something that is rather jaw-dropping. Just such an interesting idea, this family just sort of weaving their way into the lives of this rich family and doing so in such an incredibly clever and nefarious fashion.
And you sit there and you watch it and you go, why can't we have movies like this made in the USA? And you can. I mean, there's, like I said, ways. I mean, Midsummer, I guess, is overseas somewhere. But it's... You just don't see the boardroom people, and they're going, well, why don't you do this? You know, this truly his, was it
Bong
Joon-ho. It's his vision, his story, and I don't know, it's just, you wonder where he got this idea, where it comes from, and it's, sometimes you wonder what's wrong, but it's just really cool to see something that you never expect. So, I don't know. Go see it. It's definitely worthy of a Best Picture win, especially at the Academy standards.
It's really good. It just narrowly missed my top 10. And I would have preferred Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, because I think that is an incredible movie. But
right. And that's where I don't know why I'm struggling, because it's like, who cares about my list? But... It's like where I would watch that one first every time because it's that much fun to watch. But I don't know why I feel like this should be better than it. I guess it's more original, maybe. I don't know. But and then Joker, because it's a Batman story, I do love it. I do think it's got a great message. But and it's a nice original take on Joker, but it's still, you know, not... I don't know. I'd put it right along the lines with Parasite, I guess. Let's move on to our trailers. The Green Knight, A24.
Yeah, and David Lowery, the director of Ghost Story, and I can't remember the other one he did. But anyway, it's a really great looking movie, and it's got some real creepy visuals to it, reminiscent of Midsummer in a couple of ways, which I thought was interesting. Yeah, Dev Patel, I think it is, who's starring in this one, who's a really handsome-looking dude, and he really really embodies this character in a way that's very interesting. He's got a very different look and a very different energy that he brings to this type of story, which I think is fascinating, because you know, usually we're so used to these, I don't know what the time period they call this is, but like the time of knights and kings and whatnot, they always look a lot the same, and this felt a lot different just because he's there doing it, and so I really appreciated that. I'm impressed. I'm impressed with the trailer. It looks like it's got a hell of a lot more going on than Ghost Story did.
People like that.
I know a lot of people like Ghost Story. I struggled with it.
I said Josh, and then I didn't see it because of the fact that you both agreed on it. Pete's Dragon, Josh loved that.
Yeah.
He did that. He did The Old Man and a Gun and The Gun and then Ghost Story and a shit ton of shorts.
Yeah.
He edited a lot of movies. He's doing Peter Pan now.
Wow.
So it's kind of a weird...
Peter, because every... 5 years, somebody's got to roll out the fucking Peter Pan story.
He just likes characters named Pete. I guess I thought the best part about it to me was the A24 logo. It does look different, like you said, but it's still a night movie. So, but I'm always going to give it a shot because it does have that A24 logo.
Uh-huh.
And he's been one of their directors. Ghost Rider was an A24 movie, so it's definitely at least getting a chance from me. The French Dispatch.
Wes Anderson. I love it. I can't tell what the hell is happening here. This movie's not French. I don't understand what's going on.
Got his normal cast of characters.
Yeah, he's got everybody in this movie. Owen Wilson, Tilda Swinton, Bill Murray, Saoirse Ronan. They're all in there. Everybody's in there.
My wife looks at me and goes, I'm not going to see this. Don't try to make me watch this movie. And it's one of those I may or may not get to, depending on what I'm doing that week. I'm not a huge Wes Anderson fan. I like Royal Tenenbaums a lot. Rushmore is decent. After that, I just kind of lose interest.
I loved Moonrise Kingdom. I think it's amazing. I didn't care for Isle of Dogs. I've not really loved his animated stuff. But for the most part, I'm in on his unique sense of humor.
Yeah, and I'm not against it. I just kind of, I don't know that it gets better or worse. It's just kind of the same thing over and over. At least that's the way it feels to me. But who cares what I think?
Mike Swigger on our Facebook page reviewing the trailer says, Wes Anderson is one of the easiest to spot visual styles of working directors today, which that's definitely true. Absolutely true.
And I mean, you want that as an artist, but at the same time, it's like I was saying, they're all kind of equally as good or bad, however you want to look at it. I don't know. It just kind of feels like he's AC/DC, just repeating himself, doing the same thing over and over. And then he does the animated stuff. I guess that's him branching out. But
Wes Anderson is the AC/DC of movies. It's true.
A lot less successful. I'm trying to think of a more indie band. But he...
Some might say
Michael
Bay's
the AC/DC.
He's more the Tegan and Sara of.
So he's going to do a Lego movie.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah. Sonic.
Sonic the Hedgehog. You know, I went into this with a pretty bad attitude. Like, this is going to be one of the worst movies of the year, and I just don't want to be here. I wish this was over already. And that was before the movie had started.
And that's what they want you to do.
Well, they won because this isn't that bad.
Right.
Sonic the Hedgehog. This is about the best you could make a Sonic the Hedgehog movie, I think. I don't think there's any way to make a better version of this stupid thing.
Well, I mean, it's one of those. It's definitely a boardroom movie where you can see them planning it out there. But the audience reacted to the trailer, and they made changes, and I would say for the better. And my son loved this.
Loved it.
Like, he's wanting Sonic everything right now.
Wow.
For me, it was just kind of cool to see Jim Carrey being Jim Carrey again.
That is the highlight. So he plays Dr. Robotnik, the villain of the Sonic universe. He's called to Montana, where Sonic has set off a power outage in the entire northwestern U.S. because of his unique power, his ability to run super, super fast. And that's caused a blackout. And meanwhile, Sonic is also dealing with his loneliness because he doesn't talk to anybody. He's hiding on Earth to keep people from finding his powers. And, yeah, whatever, fine. Good. Add that to the story. Great. It's fine. Everything about this is fine. This is fine. James Marsden continues to make movies like this where he's just kind of, yeah, you're good. Hey, I just want to slap a sticker on his head that says you don't suck.
Who's the other one who's like James Marsden, who tends to do the batter for, like, is he really Chuck or something like that from that TV show?
Levy, the guy who played Shazam?
Yeah. Obviously Shazam was good, but when he does movies like this, they tend to be a little shittier.
Like the Chipmunks?
Yeah. James Marsden's way better at it than
way
him.
Better. Why wasn't he in a Chipmunk movie? That's what I want to know. He would have been a perfect Dave.
Big Jason Lee fan.
He was not a perfect Dave.
He was fine.
I wanted him to do better things, whereas James Marsden would have fit perfectly in the Alvin and the Chipmunk universe.
I don't think the movie gets any better.
It's shittier in a different way.
Well, and we had the card. I mean, a video game is one thing. We don't really know the story of Sonic, so they can kind of do whatever they want with it.
Yeah.
With the Chipmunks, you still had to kind of, I don't know. We kind of have an origin story there in a way, weird way. I don't know.
But at least, yeah, you're right. Jim Carrey, though, does do his Jim Carrey shtick again. He's like,
he hasn't done it in a long time.
Yeah. It feels like, I can't remember the last time. I was, you know, thinking back to it. Well, we forgot
this is a sequel to Dumb and Dumber.
Yeah.
But other than that, prior to that, it's been, it's been a long, long, like, probably Liar Liar time, you know.
Yeah. It's been since the 90s, it feels like. Like, this is the Mask levels of stuff. This is, you know, Ace Ventura levels of of his energy and weirdness.
And yeah, it was just, you know, after seeing that documentary where he's just really getting weird and seeing him on Comedians in Cars getting coffee and how awkward he is in that. And I don't know, you just kind of thought maybe Jim Carrey was done, but it was, he showed up for this and really does elevate it. Kind of like I think the Minions were hoping, or whatever, not the Minions, the other one. The Minions are in it, but the one they wanted Trey Parker to elevate something. All he did was show up for a paycheck.
Despicable.
Yeah, Despicable Me 3.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, Carrey's showing up for a paycheck, but he's having fun with it, and you can tell. So it's definitely worth it. If you have to take your kids to something, it'll entertain you enough.
Yeah, lots of energy, lots of physicality. And I got to say, Ben Schwartz, I think it is, who does the voice of Sonic, lots of energy. It's fascinating because he's made this very innocent. It's a very innocent character, and he gives it a sort of a reverent feel, even while keeping it innocent and PG rated. Which is, you know, that's a pretty big challenge to try and bring some charm to that when you're kind of handcuffed by what you can do. You're trying to impress both children. He impressed me. By being charming in a way that and childlike at the same time.
Yeah, just all around watchable. I mean, I don't know what else you can ask from a movie like that.
It is the best version of a Sonic that you could make. This was not going to be a brilliant work of art in any way. You just had to make it the best you could, and they did. And that, I mean, that's guaranteed mediocrity, but still. That's the high bar for this movie. It was mediocre.
Well, right. I mean, if you consider mediocre between like a C- and a B+, this is a solid B-. So, yeah. Good for them. Go see it. Give it a shot.
Jeff Fowler is some kind of wizard that he made this movie as well as he did.
Well, you listen to the audience, and you actually cared. I mean, that was the main. It didn't begin and end in the boardroom. It started there, and they did take care of it, kind of like a Marvel movie would, I guess. So I appreciate that from them.
Yeah.
The photograph,
Issa Rae and Lakeith Stanfield in a romance about, it's about a journalist and a woman whose mother was a photographer, and she's dealing with her emotional issues because her mother was not one who easily embraced love. She didn't really do well with long-term relationships. And Issa Rae's character is kind of dealing with whether or not she can do that, like whether or not this is like some sort of genetic condition, being unable to accept love from another person. I kept waiting for the photograph to show up. You know, there's supposed to be a photograph because it's called The Photograph. And I kept, okay, so is there going to be like some kind of mysterious thing about is there going to be the photograph in this movie? No. There really isn't. there's no the photograph. There's a bunch of photographs, but nothing is the photograph, which bugged me for whatever reason. But I was so tired during this movie. I wanted to nod off and sleep. This is a beautiful-looking movie that is just leaden in terms of pace. It's beautiful, and they're very great-looking characters, but I was not, there's no real tension or excitement. I wasn't really. The tension is supposed to be what? I want to watch these two bone, I guess. And I really like. I was kind of okay with that, but I wasn't like really looking forward to it.
Right.
It happened, and yeah, that's great. It wasn't a very impressive sex scene. Nothing about this movie is really super impressive. It's like everything's kind of okay, and it's really long and kind of dull. I really want this to feel – I wanted to feel some heat in this movie. I wanted to feel some, you know, passionate excitement, and I really never felt it. This movie never finds another gear. It's very laid back. It's very very personal, which is nice, I guess, but there's no heat, there's no passion, there's nothing exciting here. They don't even seem to really find a way to get together in an interesting way. Like the challenges to their relationship aren't very interesting, because she's exploring it, but she's not really getting anywhere. I thought from the trailer that maybe this was going to be some kind of mystery about who her father was, or maybe she's going to find her father for the first time, which I guess she kind of does, but she's not really all that excited about it. She doesn't really, she like no sells finding her father. Like, I think you're my dad. She's like, yeah, I think I might be your dad too. Yeah. Okay. Cool. You're going to stay at my house for a little while? Yeah. Hey, that reporter guy, he's coming back to my house. You know, that's how you found me. Yeah. I was dating him. Yeah. He's coming here? Yeah. Cool. That's kind of the vibe I got throughout this entire movie.
Yeah, the trailer was really intriguing, but it kind of sounds like instead of it being, you know, about what the trailer says it's about, it's more about, do I date him or not? He's reporting on my mom, and... It seems more like that's what it is.
That's the thing. He's not actually reporting about her mom. That just sort of comes up in a different story that he's doing. So that whole plot thread about her mom and her photographs goes absolutely nowhere, even though the trailer kind of indicates that's going to be part of this.
So it's even lamer than that. That's a shame, because I really like the Keith Stanfield.
Yeah.
He just has this cool look on screen at all times. I don't know. That's a shame. I tried to go see this.
I wanted some of the unique energy that he brings to everything else that he does. Yeah. They've really blanded him out here, which is shocking. He seems very tired and kind of bored throughout.
Do they play the Def Leppard song at all?
No.
It's a Nickelback song.
This is more like a Nickelback song.
You said it, not me. Downhill.
Downhill. Remake of Force Majeure from 2014, a Swiss movie with a very unique and interesting premise about a family on a ski vacation in Switzerland. And there's a avalanche, supposed to be a controlled avalanche, but this one goes a little bit out of control. And the family, this two kids and two parents, are at an outdoor cafe at this resort, and this avalanche starts coming towards them, and they think it's going to stop. They think it's going to stop, and it's not stopping. It's continuing. As it gets closer, the father gets up and runs away, grabs his phone first, and runs away.
Well, the father, because I watched the original one before I went and saw Downhill, he was actually recording the whole thing on his phone.
Right, which was a clever... I wanted to see that in this movie, too. I was surprised they didn't use that gimmick here, because they don't use that in the Will Ferrell version. That the father runs away, leaving the family behind, and the rest of the movie is about dealing with how he did that. In Force Majeure, this is a very, you know, raw, emotional examination of a couple at a crossroads here. And
it's more than just that. They each have their things that they're dealing with, which is why I love that way more than Downhill. Not that Downhill's bad, but...
Downhill's not great, because it's not really... There's no real thing happening here. It's
It's kind of like a TV sitcom taken seriously, where you got the goofy dad, but the mom was always right, even though she makes one little misstep for the most. In the Force Majeure, there both have their things they're dealing with, and it's so powerful and so real, and it's not, you know, it's not played for laughs, and not that Downhill does that, but it just, a lot of it seems more like he did this, he's a fuck up. She's perfect. And that, again, I don't know. It's just definitely a very Americanized version of the story.
It feels like Julia Louis-Dreyfus wants to be in a more dramatic Force Majeure kind of version of this, and is being dragged into a Will Ferrell movie. But the movie can't seem to get out of...
It doesn't get to either one.
No, because she's in one energy, and he's in a different energy, and they're both kind of... locked into a mode where neither movie can get started. You know, there's no, you can't take the Will Ferrell stuff seriously because it's Will Ferrell and he's not really taking it very seriously.
Well, I think he's trying, but you can't erase 20, 30 years of Will Ferrell's history. I mean, the guy does anything, you're going to laugh.
Yeah.
And so when he's trying to be serious, you don't know. Like, people are in the theater not knowing if they're supposed to laugh or not. And there's times where you're not supposed to. Like, there's a really powerful scene where, you know, him and her are with friends and she's calling him out on running away. And people in the audience are like half laughing and then not laughing and then they're crying, but they don't really know what they're supposed to do because of Will Ferrell's in it. And it,
yeah, it, and it's a very pivotal scene. And Will Ferrell's got, like, in the original version, the guy is really clinging to his version of this, even to the point where she pulls out the camera, here's what happened, and he's still trying to rationalize, and his friend is there trying to rationalize for him what took place. And This version doesn't play because Zach Woods and Will Ferrell are really high comic, you know,
right,
characters. And when Will Ferrell tries to get real for a minute and there's kind of this yelling back and forth, it doesn't work because we're used to Will Ferrell. When he yells, he's being funny.
Well, and then like you said, Zach Woods doesn't help the situation. So you don't buy him his you know. It just, I don't know. It just feels choreographed. I don't know, for lack of a better word. It doesn't feel real, and therefore there's just so much. I mean, I wasn't going to go to Downhill because we have to get a ceiling fan thing repaired, and last time I did it, it blew up my face. So I'm like, I'm not going to touch it. And they were going to come, and they kept they were so late that we were just not going to go to the movie, and then finally I'm like, they're 2 hours late. I'm canceling them, and we went. Because my wife really wanted to see it. She did not watch the original with me, so she liked Downhill. But if you see Force Majeure, you can't watch Downhill and not, I don't know. It's hard to like.
It can't not be disappointing because Force Majeure is much more powerful. It's got much more of a stronger point to it. And it's the rare movie, Force Majeure, that comes to an end and it just sort of peters out. And I like that. Like, it's not a big dramatic ending. There's a bit of a minor fuck you, and then it just sort of ends. And it's like, yeah, that's the way this is supposed to go.
But I don't know. It's still part of the character's work. And I mean, it never really ends. But that's also like 45 minutes longer than Downhill is. Downhill's a short movie.
Oh, yeah.
And so they basically cut her whole storyline out. All they have is her dealing with him instead of everything else she goes through. And I guess it's fine. I can see why people like it, but it's definitely a very Americanized, strategic movie, and I just loses me a little bit.
I was surprised that like, because in Force Majeure, there's a couple things I thought, okay, Will Ferrell's definitely going to do this in his Will Ferrell fashion. Because there's a couple scenes where the father is in the hallway in his underwear. I'm like, Will Ferrell and Tiny Whitey's got it. That's going to happen. And it doesn't happen. And I was like, how do you not do that with Will Ferrell?
And
but then there's the sweat lodge scene. I'm like, okay, in the Force Majeure, there's a sweat lodge scene. I'm like, they're going to do Will Ferrell in that. They got to. And they don't.
And then they teased, you know, everybody's naked here. And so
I can't wait for that to pay off.
And it doesn't even come close.
No.
There's nothing even really that awkward.
And then they've got this Will Ferrell movie kind of character who's the in charge of this lodge that they're at. This woman who's just this sexually voracious character who wants to have sex with everybody she sees, and she's again another character who's dragging us away from the more dramatic elements of this story. This character was not in Force Majeure. We don't have that character.
Kinda, but it's very small. It's one. It's not played for comedy, and it's not that character. There's one character that she talks about. How can you have all these men? But it's literally a conversation she's having with one person.
Yeah,
kind of a one-off. It does take you out of this. I don't know. It's just so, I hate to say it, so American, but it's so, it's just strategic. Everything about it is, you know, them thinking about, well, what about this topic? What about this topic? And let's do the, you know,
it's very much like they've taken like the premise and like, well, if we put Will Ferrell in this premise, it's funny. You know, because Will Ferrell as the guy who grabs his phone and runs away from his family, leaving them behind, that's a funny idea. And that's very much where you get the fingerprints of, like, executives going, Will Ferrell would be very funny doing that.
Well, but even then, the way they're sitting at a picnic table.
Yeah.
Her and the two kids are on one side. He's on the other side. So even then, there's nothing he could do other than just sit there with them. Because he can't go over there and protect them. And even in Force Majeure, they're each two on each side.
Yeah.
And he full-blown runs over one of the kids and walks away.
He knocks over a guy as he's running away.
Yeah. So even that plays more... I mean, it almost makes more sense in the Will Ferrell movie. Like, well... I mean, why not make him run over a kid if you want it to be funny, number one? But number two, there's nothing he could have really done. Yeah, he ran away, but it's harder to, I don't know. Just the whole thing is just so much weaker and disappointing. And
yeah.
Then they got to explain everything. In Force Majeure, there's a scene where they're cross-country skiing, and then she starts calling for her from a distance. You don't really know what happens. I mean, you do, but they don't go and say, here's what's going on. Here they like, here's what's going on. And again, just so
very much condescending, talking down to the audience,
right? And I don't know, but the Force Majeure is fantastic.
Yeah, that is a great movie. There's a side character in that who's just the girlfriend of the friend character, and she's so much better just because the tension of that is that she's just so much younger than this guy, right. And that's a much better tension than what they get here, which is she's a millennial, likes Instagram, and like that's again, that's another of those Will Ferrell movie kind of plots where you've got this girl who likes Instagram hashtags, and she's, you know, ah ha ha, those stupid millennials. The Force Majeure, she's just younger, and the tension is this guy's thinking, well, I'm too old for her, she's going to leave me. And that's two side characters. Like, they right. don't even matter. Like, they're side characters, but they've given them this life to go with, this tension that exists there within their relationship that is not here.
Right. In this movie, they're both young.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't – and, again, it's played for laughs, more or less. I don't know. It just is really, the more I get away from it, it's just an empty movie.
Yeah.
It's very strategic, very American, very spoon-fed, and
we get a drunk Will Ferrell and it doesn't go anywhere. That's the scene where he's supposed to end up at the sweat lodge. Is he gets super drunk and ends up, you know, accidentally wandering into the sweatshop, which in Force Majeure is this like weird, exciting scene because he's, you know, he's gotten a little bit drunk, he's wandered off, he's accidentally ended up in this sweat lodge, and like other men are like tearing at his clothes while he's in there, and then they're throwing back beers, everybody's partying and jumping up and down, and it's very scary, and he begins to fall into it, he begins to join them and become part of the scene, and it's very exciting and strange. And I thought for sure that would be an amazing scene to have Will Ferrell in this movie. And they just don't even go there.
Did they go to a club?
Yeah.
And he tries to fight a guy.
Does not work at all.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the best scene in the movie is from the two characters from Force Majeure. Which is not even in Force Majeure, that scene.
Yeah, they totally added that.
Yeah, I had to even get my phone out. Like, that's definitely him. It has to be. And then the guy in the back, I think that he's the guy smoking the cigarette in the movie as well, in Force Majeure. I don't know. It's disappointing because I could see that working.
Yeah.
And I really think if they had added another 30 minutes, 45 minutes, and really let Julia Louis-Dreyfus' character have the same storyline the character in Force Majeure had, it could have survived that Will Ferrell stuff. Maybe make the friends similar to the original as yeah. well.
You know who could have done this really, really well is Ben Stiller. Ben Stiller or Steve Carell. I think one of those two
Paul
guys
Rudd
really
could have done it.
Could have really nailed that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, and I think she's good in it. I just, it's really, it goes back to that boardroom direct, you know, making the movie. And
dumb it down, make sure the Americans understand this.
Right. So it's a bummer, but Force Majeure is great, so I got that out of it.
And that's on Tubi, so watch that.
Yes. I didn't even know. I mean, you've told me a couple weeks in a row about Tubi, and I've had it. I've just never turned it on. Watched two movies on it this week. What next? A classic, right? That's all you saw, right? Downhill Photograph and Sonic?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Parasite, I guess.
I didn't see Fantasy, whatever.
Yeah, who cares?
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the main event for the linear, legitimate, and universally recognized, undisputed
classic.
The Brood.
David Cronenberg, 1979. Bizarre story, and of course, classically Cronenberg visionary stuff. Oliver Reed is a doctor. He's treating a patient who, he's got a very unique way with his patients, where he takes on different personas as their husband, their child, their parent, and role plays his way through their therapy, which is very weird and unique. The husband is very concerned because his daughter. He goes to pick up his daughter, and she's got all these like bruises and welts on her back. And he's like, "Okay, I can't take my kid to see her anymore." This leads to something happening where there's this new character introduced, this little tiny person that looks a lot like the daughter but isn't. It's like this little demon thing arrives and starts killing people. And it's anybody who seems to have angered the mom, and that's building towards something that is a shocker of a reveal, to say the least. This movie is awesome. It's a classically Cronenberg. So much weird, unusual tension. That incredible piano score that is just it just chills you. It's got that perfect tone to just rattle your spine when you're watching it, especially when you got headphones on. It's right. Just like it's playing the nerves in your spine as it's going. Then of course there's just those classic like just Cronenberg creeps, just the kind of gross shit that he loves. There's a birthing scene in this movie that is wow. It's fantastic. It is just so gross. I retched. I'm not going to lie. I retched.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you said classic Cronenberg, and I know what you mean, but I've only seen like Eastern Promises, History of Violence, the Stephen King one, yeah. And then I guess The Fly, and now this. I've never seen Videodrome. I've never seen Scanners. So those will definitely have to be future classics after seeing this one. I mean, you know, I saw Parasite this week, so I saw it after I saw The Brood. And so, wholly original, where do you come up with this shit? Just a weird-ass but really good movie. It just, I don't know. It was a fun watch, a crazy watch, and just awesome.
Just 2 weeks in a row where female rage plays a big part in a movie, and I really love it as a theme. This is based entirely on her anger and what she's angry at, and she's able to physicalize her anger into a thing that acts on behalf of her anger, which is very cool. What a cool premise.
The only thing I see wrong with that presence is her husband doesn't die.
Yeah.
He's not the first one to go. Because they're definitely having problems right. As to why we're here anyway. But that aside, it's the way it goes, just like, where do you even come up with this shit? I mean,
what could possibly inspire a story like this is...
Well, it's funny because my brother once had this thing on his arm that just kept growing and growing. He didn't go to the doctor. And then eventually just popped and something came out of it. It wasn't like an animal or anything.
Yeah.
Insect, but he called it his little, he referred to it as a fetus. And he may have seen this movie. He must have, because he was a big Cronenberg fan. So he had to have seen this movie.
Right.
But I never knew. And all of a sudden seeing this movie, that's exactly what I thought of was this little thing he had on his arm that ended up popping and making a, I don't know. Just
that's not normal.
No. But it never came back, and he's been fine since. But
oh, that's good.
It definitely reminded me of that.
Yeah. Wow. That the big reveal. Boy, that is quite a reveal, to say the least.
Even the scene where they're figuring out what it is, and I don't know, the whole, just everything about it is just neat. Yeah. I don't know. It's and. Now that I'm, I mean, Oliver Reed, is that his name?
Yeah.
He does some weird, for as normal looking as he right? is, he does some weird ass movies. Tommy's pretty freaking weird.
Right.
I've always wanted to see this movie called The Devils that, was it Ken Russell?
Ken Russell, yeah.
Did that, I, you know, you hear about, but it's never been, like, truly released. Only versions of it have been, have come out. He's apparently in that, and there's some messed up stuff in there. I don't know. He's just a weird, and I've watched, like, I kind of went down the rabbit hole with him, and, like, there's this really weird interview where he's on Letterman, and not, I mean, kind of similar to that Joaquin Phoenix interview when it was staged.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
But he's also much older at the time, too. but he's just a weird
legendary
dude.
Drunk. Legendary.
He was drunk.
Yeah, he's known for his just the great story. There's a making of
right.
documentary, and there's a story they tell about him getting arrested in Toronto while they're making this movie, and, or Montreal while they're making this movie, and he got arrested because he got super super drunk and decided to bet somebody that he could walk back to his hotel naked. So they arrest him, of course. They take him to the police station. When the producer shows up to try and bail him out, all the cops are just rolling, laughing, listening to Oliver Reed tell stories.
Yeah. I don't know. It's I can't recommend it highly enough. It's on YouTube. That's where I saw it, at least. I think that's where it was, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it is on YouTube. I think Videodrome is on there, too, as is Shivers. Like, a lot of Cronenberg stuff is just sitting there on YouTube.
Yeah, next time we can't come up with a classic just for no other reason.
Just throw out just a Cronenberg. Throw a Cronenberg movie.
We did it with Hitchcock a few years ago, and I'll knock out the Cronenberg collection. Because I've literally seen shit other than, like, the newest stuff. So I'm excited to jump down this rabbit hole, especially after this. I mean, so much so that I went through Nightbreed and not realizing that wasn't Cronenberg. It was...
No, he's just in it. He's just in it.
Like, oh, Clive Barker, yay.
So you saw Nightbreed?
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't, so that's good.
Well,
I wanted to see it.
I was at work for both these movies, and I had it on my iPad, and I was watching it, and The Brood grabbed me in, and I'm working. I'm in this whole thing all the way. Nightbreed did not. I mean, it plays more like The Lost Boys, I guess. Oh, yeah, it's kind of goofy, and I mean, there's some neat images, but it's like a Clive Barker neat, so it is what it is. I don't want to just badmouth him. He's just not my style.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a throwaway. I mean, it's got its audience, I'm sure, but it's not for me. I don't know. I can't think of the name of the lead. He looks like Steven Dorff.
Nightbreed stars Craig Sheffer. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Craig Sheffer and David Cronenberg.
Right. And it is what it is, but it definitely didn't hold my interest, and I ended up getting more work done during that movie. But I'm telling you what, The Brood, go see that right away.
Oh, grab that. It's on our Facebook page. You can watch that and the documentary are both on our Facebook page if you want to take a look at them, because I linked them both on the page. So
yeah, I mean, if you want this episode alone, Parasite, The Brood, and Force Majeure. Go see those movies right away.
And forget everything else that actually came out.
I mean, if your kids want to see Sonic, it's cool.
Yeah.
It's worth it.
Sure.
Yeah. There's a lot of good stuff in the show. What else? Did you see anything from 1990?
I did see Madhouse.
Hey, I watched that one too.
Yeah, I wish I had.
Part of me was just kind of like, don't you ever wish you could go back to a time where rich white people can be in charge of what's okay to say and what's okay not to say? This movie does not hold up at all.
No, it
does at not. All.
Not even a little bit.
I don't want to say it's offensive because it's so dumb that it's hard to cross that line, but it's not far from it. I don't know.
It is a difficult movie to sit through. It is so shrill and so over the top constantly. Everybody talks at the top of their voice at all times. There's just, it's all energy all thrown at you all at once. It's like, just shut the fuck up, movie, please.
Well, on top of that, it's, even if it wanted to accomplish what it's accomplishing, I mean, it is erratic. It's, you know, some point you're just like, at this point, I understand suicide. Go for it. Because, I mean, they're literally living in a tent in their backyard at one point, right. And their house is destroyed. They're going to be so much in debt they can't get out of it, even with, you know, there's just their life is ruined.
Yeah.
There's nothing left. And then at the very end, oh, I will pay for all of it. I don't know. It's...
Oh, you didn't think something bad was going to happen to rich white people, did you?
No, I didn't, but... I mean, I'll give it the fact that it did get so crazy and out of control that I could see that people being frustrated in the time, but it is so over the top. I mean, I guess Christy Alley looks cool and crazy at certain points, but that's about the only thing that's. I mean, she looks like the Joker at one point, all purple and green and just absolutely nuts. But other than that, it's really just a. I don't know.
I found it loud and yeah.
Yeah, I'd never seen it. I remember the trailer from when I was a kid because I used to remember Christy Alley with spray paint and I don't know why I remember that from when I was a kid, but I do.
I remembered Larroquette because I always wanted, like as a kid, I wanted Larroquette to be a star because I loved Night Court and it just never happened. And I was always like, why isn't this guy happening?
And then you saw this. Because this is what this movie was designed for. It's take the star from Cheers and the star from Night Court. Let's blow them up.
Right.
And it didn't
talk really about happen. Fingerprints everywhere all over this movie.
Yeah.
Hey, let's cast Dennis Miller, too, because he's hot on Saturday Night Live at the time.
Right. And let's just write ourselves in the corner and then not even really try to get out of it. And just, just keep piling on and I don't know. It is
louder,
what it is.
Bigger, louder, bigger.
And Larroquette's not a loud guy, so that doesn't work as well for him either. And maybe Tom Hanks should have been in it. I don't know.
He already made this movie.
He made this movie like 15 times. I like those movies way better.
That says a lot.
That's the Tom Hanks I liked. That's why I can't watch, you know, Saving Private Ryan, because the guy whose house was a money pit. Shouldn't be leading an army. What else? Courage Mountain. What was that? You remember?
Charlie Sheen, directed by Christopher Leitch. I didn't see it, but apparently it's a mountain climbing movie, I guess.
You would have hated it, though.
Like, why the fuck are you climbing that mountain?
Right, exactly.
Go home and have some coffee or something, dude.
You don't do mountain climbing movies on here. And then Revenge, what was that?
Kevin Costner and Anthony Quinn, directed by Tony Scott, which is the movie I was supposed to watch this week and just totally forgot about. Because it was the only big name movie of the week.
Yeah, I totally forgot about that movie. Now I remember the cover. But, I mean, rest in peace, but I've never really been a Tony Scott fan.
Yeah, no, me either. I've always really despised his style, honestly.
And The Witches.
The Witches, which, weird. I have no idea.
Kids movie, isn't it? PG?
I think so. Directed by Nicholas Roeg, which is odd.
Pretty sure it's a PG movie.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, it is what it is. But yeah, The Brood, Parasite, and Force Majeure. Go see those. Forget about everything else. Next week, we've got Call of the Wild. Oh my god, I scribbled. Braun, the boys
Brahms.
Two? Brahms, the boys
it's
two.
It's not Braun Strowman.
All I see is a B in this, like, scribbles.
Brahms, the boy two, starring Katie Holmes.
And Call the Wild, Harrison Ford's dog movie.
Yeah, what
it's not
a
even called
great
a dog
week.
Movie. And then.
It's a fake dog movie.
And then Practical Jokers is coming out and. It says it's coming here. I'll be in St. Louis. It's apparently going there as well. I'm going to try to see that because I'm a big fan of that show. Our classic is Eggshells, the first Tobe Hooper movie, right? That's what it was?
Yeah, that's his film debut. But if you want to switch it to Videodrome, we can.
We'll see. I lose Friday, Saturday, and I'll be driving back Sunday. So I got to...
Right, right.
Luckily, I don't got to see Call of the Wild. My son wants to see it so bad, though. Thank God we're out of it. He likes seeing Practical Jokers, too, so that's good.
That's good.
1990, we've got Angel Town, The Blood of Heroes, Mountain on the Moon, Rockula, which looks great.
Oh, yeah. Dean Cameron, Tony Basil. I mean, in a musical, no less.
It's going to be terrible. Spontaneous Combustion, the Tobe Hooper movie that we are getting eggshells from. And then Where the Heart Is. None of these overly all successful back in that year, 1990.
The only thing I remember about Where the Heart is Uma Thurman is topless in it.
Is it available?
Well, the thing is, she's covered in paint. So she's topless, but she's covered in paint. That's literally all I remember about this movie.
Yes,
yeah, so I was 14. Give me a break. I was talking to the audience.
I was 10, turning 11. So if for whatever reason we end up not doing an episode next week, you don't know why.
I got canceled for mentioning Uma Thurman's boobs.
No. I mean, I was talking Call of the Wild and Brahms the Boy 2 and these 1990 movies.
Yeah, there's no force majeure in this one, that's for sure.
There's no reason to. Well, there's no force majeure in this one. We watched it on our own because it was downhill. I'm glad I did. But that is our show. I want to thank our Patreon supporters for supporting the podcast.
Thank you to Tubi.
Tubi for, and YouTube for giving me some free movies. Our key grip level, it's Charlie Messing and Jason Bryant. Character actor level, Cousin Jeff, Christina Cato, and Josh and Beth Paul. At the craft services level, Zach Kovemaker, and at our special effects level, Corey Finner. And if you want to be a Patreon supporter, head over to ihatecritics.net/Patreon to get yourself a credit on the show. And then there's also our merch tab at ihatecritics.net as well. And there will be some updates coming soon. I've figuratively been buried at work. So, and I'm doing my best. I apologize. What's it called? Flick Chart?
Yeah, that's the one.
21 Jump Street or Rear Window, 1954.
Rear Window.
Obviously. A League of Their Own, Enemy at the Gates.
League of Their Own.
Correct. National Lampoon's European Vacation, The Silence of the Lambs.
Silence of the Lambs.
The Man in the Iron Mask, A Beautiful Mind.
Beautiful Mind.
The Beach, 2000, Hot Shots.
Hot Shots.
Yep. Shallow Hal, A Time to Kill.
Oh, that's tough. That's tough. They're both really watchable.
I know. Shallow Hal is the comedy, but Time to Kill is the drama.
Shallow Hal.
Go ahead and flip for it if you have it.
Heads.
Shallow Hal it is. Only because I'm so attached to the book that I read in junior high. But was at my reading level. Point Break, 13 Going on 30.
13 Going on 30.
Sure. I'll go with you because my sister loves that movie and I don't hate it. Resident Evil Extinction, Spy.
Spy. I don't even remember. Oh, yeah, Spy is Melissa McCarthy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that definitely.
10 Things I Hate About You, Beowulf, 07.
Oh, definitely 10 Things. Beowulf is absolute trash.
City of God, Munich.
Ooh, that is tough. That is tough. City of God's a great movie. And so is Munich. I would say City of God.
I'm going to go with you because that's one I haven't seen. So I was gonna, and I love Munich. I don't hate it, but I'm not as in love with it as everybody else is. Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. Tropic Thunder.
Well, it's Last Crusade? Yeah, it's definitely Tropic Thunder.
Yeah, you took too long on
that. I had to remember which Indiana Jones we were talking about because I still like the other two.
That's a third or fourth one as well.
Is there?
The Kingdom and the Crystal Skull, the Fridge movie, Thor and the Birdcage.
Thor. Birdcage is super offensive.
Really?
Oh, super offensive. Like, they got away with it at the time, but, like...
Well, yeah, it's a different...
You watch it now, these are just some of the most offensive gay stereotypes in history. Just ugly. Ugliness. How Hank Azaria still has a career is beyond me. Like, if we could retroactively cancel somebody, it would be him. People go back and look at what Hank Azaria has done on screen.
Well, yeah. I mean, obviously the Simpson character is alone.
It's terrifying.
Yeah, but I mean, the guy's grown, so it's good.
Literally, like, I would actually compare his character in The Birdcage to Mickey Rooney in Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Oh,
it's
really?
That bad.
The Mighty Ducks, a Scanner Darkly.
Scanner Darkly.
Yeah.
Mighty Ducks is super watchable, though.
Yeah, but you don't go against, what's his name? Just totally left
Linklater.
Linklater, yeah. What's his name? North by Northwest, Death Proof.
Ooh, that's good. Death Proof.
Really?
I love Death Proof.
I do too, but North by Northwest is awesome.
North by Northwest is an amazing movie. I love Death Proof.
Okay, what if I tell you it was North by Northwest or Grindhouse and I just said Death Proof to make it challenging for you?
Then it would be North by Northwest by a landslide.
Okay, because that's what it is.
Because Grindhouse drags everything down.
It's not fair. It's supposed to be bad. I mean, I'd go North by Northwest anyway, but Luxo Jr., 1986, you know what that is?
No.
Okay, let's see. Super Mario Brothers, My Cousin Vinny.
My Cousin Vinny.
Gone Girl. Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2. Matilda, Lost in Translation.
Lost in Translation.
North by Northwest, The Watchmen.
North by Northwest.
I wonder if we watch The Watchmen again, if you'll start to... Did you hate it when you saw it? Or is it just over time, just kind of like...
I think it was just...
As he's making worse and worse movies.
I did not care for it. It wasn't like... It wasn't like a lot of active hatred. It was just kind of like...
This is long. It's a waste of my time. Yeah. It's definitely overblown.
I just find it bland. It's very bland. Like, it just there's no real flavor to it. It's got this big idea behind it. That Dr. Manhattan's bringing the end of the world about because he thinks it's, you know, the right thing to do. And that's a pretty big idea. And at the same time, the movie just does, like, especially, like, oh, God, what's his name? The guy who plays the Batman analog. Is it Patrick Wilson?
Yeah.
Like, he's just so boring. What a boring character that guy is. Like, I wanted the other character.
Rorschach?
Rorschach to be, like, this iconic thing, because everybody talks about Rorschach being iconic, and it's like, you know, he's gravelly-voiced, and he pops up where, you know, anywhere he wants to, like... You're Batman. You're doing Batman. Everybody's doing Batman here. Like, we're all doing this Batman dystopia thing, but we're not nearly as interesting as Batman.
He was definitely the highlight of the movie, though.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, maybe that's not saying much, but...
I kind of liked the ending, because the thing that wasn't going to be exposed gets exposed. I don't know.
I do think there's a lot of, like, I went and read the book, and there's a lot of people, you get really invested in it, so you said it before, like, sometimes you want to like a movie because you're paying money in there, and I definitely think there's an element of that for me with Watchmen.
It doesn't help that everything in the backstory is far more interesting than the story we're watching, like, with the Captain America analog who's in Vietnam, right. Who's like a psychopath version of that, the Jeffrey Dean Morgan character, like... He's so much more interesting than the character we see die. You know?
Well, he dies right off the bat. Isn't that weird, though, Jeffrey Dean Morgan's career up until this Walking Dead run, where everything he did, he just died at the beginning of it?
The Sean Bean School of Acting.
Inspector Gadget, Who's That Knocking at My Door?
I don't know that one.
Neither do I, 1967. Inspector Gadget, The Naked Gun, 2.5.
Two and a half.
The Birds, Reservoir Dogs.
Fuck.
That is a hard one.
Reservoir Dogs.
I think I'm with you. Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter, Shrek.
Shrek. Still don't understand the Shrek cult, but...
Is there a Shrek cult?
Millennials love Shrek.
Why like, am I not in this thing?
I'm serious. Like they, I don't know what it is. Like, but they like love Shrek. Like it's actually really brilliant. Like it is. This is a cultural touchstone. Like for us, like Roger Rabbit was, or like something like you know, similar like that.
I guess it would be for their age.
I guess.
Because I liked it.
I appreciate it. It didn't really resonate with me as something like this needs to be remembered by the culture forever.
I was always kind of bummed that it hasn't been remembered by the culture forever. I didn't realize it was a cult. But it did overstay its welcome a little bit.
I find it bizarre when I talk to like some millennials. Like they're like, oh, yeah, Shrek. Yeah, that's one of the all-time greats. But then it's kind of like... Back to the Future. Today, I think back on Back to the Future. Like, yeah, I love Back to the Future, but like, there's a cult around Back to the Future that thinks like this is the movie we should be talking about today, as opposed to the, you know, the actual really amazing movies that were made at the time.
Right. I mean, I've always liked Shrek. I don't know. I've always liked having Shrek dolls to cuddle with at night. But once a girl compared me to Shrek, said I look like Shrek, and I was like, oh, that's nice. And then she bought me a sign for my birthday, or no, for Christmas. It's in my bathroom right now. It says, it's not that big. Scan closer to the toilet so you don't dribble. So she's been.
Yeah. So wait, your wife called you Shrek?